In Atlanta, a new wave of protests begins after a white police officer fatally shoots a black man in the back. We will have the latest. Plus, we look at India, where it faces unique challenges in controlling the coronavirus.
Now, with this tsunami of COVID cases, what was on a regular day already a bad situation has become impossible and unbearable.
And volatile markets, as well as volatile trading, a volatility. We'll simplify that and explain why it matters. It is Monday, June the 15th. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News. We're going to begin in Atlanta, where prosecutors, protesters, and politicians are raising questions following the fatal police shooting over the weekend. Videos of the incident are getting international attention, and the local DA says the officer seen shooting the man on video could face a murder charge. Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms spoke over the weekend.
While we have a police force full of men and women who work alongside our communities with honor, respect, and dignity, there has been a disconnect with what our expectations are and should be as it relates to interactions with our officers and the communities in which they are entrusted to protect.
Video shows Rashard Brooks running from police in a Wendy's parking lot after grabbing a taser from an officer. He points it at an officer, though it's not clear if he fires the taser. Then one of the officers shoots Brooks. Atlanta's police chief resigned in the wake of the shooting. The officer seen pulling the trigger was fired. The other officer on the scene was placed on administrative duty. It couldn't be determined if the officers have attorneys. The deadly shooting sparked a new wave of protests.
What do you want?
Justice!
What do you want?
Yeah!
What do you want?
Justice!
Demonstrators in other major cities also marched, continuing days of unrest following the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis police custody. Turning to the coronavirus pandemic, a senior economic advisor to President Trump says the government should end a boost to jobless benefits. Larry Kudlow spoke on CNN.
Almost all businesses, frankly, on both sides of the aisle, or mostly both sides of the aisle, understand that the $600 plus up, that's above the state unemployment benefits that they will continue to receive, is in effect a disincentive. I mean, we're paying people not to work. It's better than their salaries would get. And that might have worked for the first couple of months. It'll end in late July. I think that returning to employment, we are in the administration, the president is looking at a reform measure that will still provide some kind of bonus for returning to work, but it will not be as large and it will create an incentive to work.
A new wave of peaceful protests in Germany is raising concerns that the large gatherings could reverse progress made in controlling the coronavirus. Our Boyan Panchevsky was at the mass demonstration in Berlin over the weekend, which brought together varied causes and attempted to incorporate social distancing.
Some of them are in favor of protecting the rights of refugees, others fight against racism. Most of them seem to be doing work related to climate change. It's a very positive atmosphere. The gist of it is basically they're forming a human chain, which they say should be around 9 kilometers long, starting from the center of Berlin, from the landmark Brandenburg Gate, all the way to the hip area of Kreuzberg. People are wearing masks. They are keeping the social distance of 1.5 meters, which is sort of prescribed here in Germany.
Right after this, how market volatility and the trading of it are making things more complicated on Wall Street. Futures trading points to a lower opening on Wall Street this morning. This comes after a week of ups and downs, driving stock volatility to high levels. The trading of volatility is becoming a bigger and bigger business, bringing in new risk. Our markets editor, Quentin Webb, explains.
So this year has been an exceptionally volatile one for stock markets, and that is a useful reminder, in fact, of how much volatility itself has grown to become an asset class in its own right. Many investors now are making bets effectively on whether markets will stay placid or whether they will get choppier. And at some points this year, this has led to extraordinary gains for people who bet on very extreme events happening in the markets, as we saw in March. The rise of the volatility industry is an interesting one because it tends to kind of create these feedback loops. So if markets are very, very placid, a lot of people think they can make a little extra return by betting against volatility. And that tends to have the effect of pushing these measures of volatility down even further. Conversely, you can get a kind of vicious circle in a very turbulent market where the interplay between volatility products and the underlying stocks can lead to greater or more amplified turbulence. So, you know, it's a big emerging asset class and one that adds an extra dynamic to what's going on in the broader financial markets.
We've spoken before about the challenge facing American retail stores during the pandemic. Yet in small towns, some stores are thriving. We talked to Wall Street Journal columnist Jinju Lee.
So what's happening is small town retailers saw larger sales growths compared to those in more population-dense areas during the pandemic. Lowe's, for instance, is more rural and outperformed the less rural Home Depot. And the same with Dollar General, which outperformed the more urban Dollar Tree. Now, some of that advantage is specific to the pandemic period, just because small towns are generally less affected by the pandemic than the population-dense ones. But there does seem to be characteristics of small town retail that make it more defensive than those in the more populated areas.
And Jinju says that while e-commerce is proving to be popular in big cities, there's potentially less appeal in small towns because more people have cars, making it easier to get to the store. In a moment, with an enormous population and a growing number of coronavirus cases, India faces a unique challenge. We'll talk to our reporter who covers India. In China, there are new concerns about a possible coronavirus resurgence after Beijing confirmed a record number of new COVID-19 infections. Officials there linked nearly 80 new cases to a large food market and have put in tight new controls. The other nation with a population over a billion is India, of course, and there are fears the pandemic is proving difficult to control there. For some insight, we are joined by our Deputy South Asia Bureau Chief, Eric Bellman. Eric, let's talk big picture. What is the primary challenge facing India in this ongoing effort to contain the coronavirus?
Well, what you have to understand is that India, even before the virus, had an underfunded and sort of overstretched health infrastructure in terms of number of beds, in terms of number of doctors. And now with this tsunami of COVID cases, what was on a regular day already a bad situation has become impossible and unbearable.
Eric, as we have been reporting, India has seen a recent surge in cases. But until that happened, there had been some stories of success.
Yeah, well, India was smart in that it locked down across the country and relatively early when it didn't have that many cases. And surprisingly for a chaotic country, the lockdown held pretty well. People did stay in their houses. There wasn't many people on the streets. It seemed to be working. And it definitely delayed this takeoff that we're seeing now and hopefully reduced it. But what was happening at the same time is you've got a country that just has a very high population density, not just in the cities, the mega cities and places like Delhi and Mumbai that have more than 20 million people and some of the highest population densities in the world. But even India's villages are quite dense. You have large families sharing small homes. And so anywhere the virus would get into, it would spread pretty quickly, even with people staying home. And we saw that happen in the slums of India. We saw that happen across Delhi and places like Chennai. The concern now is that the lockdown has been eased and millions of migrant workers that were working in the cities have rushed home to their villages. And the concern is those migrant workers are now going to bring the virus to the village.
As far as resources are concerned, is the response meeting the needs?
It's all relative. Certain parts of India are doing okay. Places like Kerala have done relatively well. But big cities like New Delhi and Mumbai are already overstretched. Hospitals are rejecting people. Crematoriums and cemeteries have bodies piling up. The government has had, thanks to the lockdown, has had some extra time to start building some infrastructure, and it's done thousands of beds and hundreds or thousands of ventilators they've brought in and new hospital beds and repurposed lots of different areas.
These are difficult and heartbreaking stories to report on. Yet, are there some areas or reasons for hope based on perhaps the age of the population?
One thing we see is that the death rate relative to population and relative to the number of infections is surprisingly low. India actually is more vulnerable on a lot of sicknesses that aren't trouble elsewhere, things like pneumonia, things that don't kill people as much elsewhere, often kill children and others in India. And the concern was that this could hit harder in India, but it looks like India has been hit less hard so far in terms of the number of cases. So people are trying to figure out what's going on here. The hope is that the death rate is much lower, and the question is why. The question, one of the basic theories is that India is a very young country. Its median age is around 27, much younger than other places, particularly in countries like the UK and London and Spain, which are generally older, on the older side of the spectrum, which have been hit harder. So the hope is that it's seeing the virus, but because it's hitting, it's running into young bodies, it's killing fewer people. And let's continue to hope that whatever it is that seems to have been protecting Indians from death will continue.
The Wall Street Journal's Deputy South Asia Bureau Chief Eric Bellman. Eric, we appreciate your reporting.
Thank you.
And that's what's news for this morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. We're back with another updated episode this evening. And there's always more on WSJ.com and our app. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.